Are you powerful? The very concept of power can be a fraught one in our culture, with countless groups and individuals competing for more authority and agency in their careers and in their lives. Until recently, economic and social power was arguably held largely by men. But as the culture shifts, the very nature of power may be changing. Veteran journalists Caddy Kay and Claire Shipman document this change in the book, The Power Code: More Joy, Less Ego, Maximum Impact for Women and Everyone. Caddy is the anchor of BBC World News America, and Claire is an award-winning television journalist turned author and speaker. They've co-written two previous New York Times bestsellers, and Claire joins us now to share five big ideas from their new book.
Hi, I'm Claire Shipman. I'm a reporter and co-author, along with Caddy Kay, of The Power Code, as well as Womenomics and The Confidence Code. The Power Code is an in-depth look at women in power and the current state of play. It was a journey that took some unexpected turns. We're going to share five of the key insights from our book. Insight number one. Power for women has both a supply and a demand problem. Women often don't want power, at least not in the current version. We all know women aren't where we should be based on our qualifications or education or all predictions. Only 10% of the CEOs at Fortune 500 companies are women. Only 27 of the 193 countries in the world are led by women. We also know, or mostly know, why. The supply issues, bias, cultural stereotypes, unfair hurdles, we could go on. But it turns out there's a real problem with the demand side, and it caught us by surprise. Many women often recoil from today's power. Now, when we first saw that research, we were startled. We'd often had that reaction to power, but we didn't know it was so widespread. And we also didn't like that it might suggest women aren't capable or ambitious. In fact, what the studies show is that women are just extremely discerning about our choices. We see the costs of getting it as too high, and power itself as unappealing. Allison Wood Brooks, an associate professor at Harvard Business School, has been investigating women in power for years. Initially, she was convinced that the reason we don't have more women in positions of power is because of all those barriers that block our route. And those barriers definitely exist. But then she started to look at the demand side and found a more complex picture. Brooks compared men and women, their life goals, and their power goals, and found that women have more of the former and fewer of the latter. Her research uncovered that women see power in conflict with their broad set of life goals, family, friends, community, exercise, for example. Men don't value activities outside of work to the same degree that women do, which meant, according to her studies, they were less conflicted about wanting power. There was less downside for men. She also concluded that when women look at the experience of having power, they see it more negatively than men do. Brooks's research is borne out by data that shows more job authority. When women have more job authority, they experience more anxiety, stress, and symptoms of depression. And men? Well, men with authority at work have fewer symptoms of depression than men without such power. Why? The workplace can be more toxic for women than men. Women in authority are often viewed as lacking the assertiveness of traditional male leaders. And when women do display those characteristics, they face a backlash because they're seen as unfeminine. It all contributes to stress at the top. Women of color have that stress magnified because they often experience racism and discrimination as well. So we may opt out of power for any number of good reasons having to do with goals and an accurate assessment of what it might feel like. But it's not our attitude that needs to change or our aptitude. We have all of the qualifications. We're ready to wield power effectively and with great impact. Women are better educated than men in an economy that values brain over brawn. Multiple global studies show corporations perform better, literally have higher profits when they employ more women in leadership. Women deliver and perform better than men at work. The problem isn't with women. The problem is power itself and its current hierarchy. Insight number two. Women and men actually see power and define it quite differently. We were surprised by this also. We figured we'd ground our work in basic definitions of power and move on, but defining power became central to our thesis. The classic understanding of modern power for the last century or so was brought to us by sociologists, men who'd studied this stuff. David Winter, emeritus professor of psychology at the University of Michigan, defines power as the ability to make something that's not part of you do what you want it to do. You have power over a person if you can essentially make that person bend to your will. That framing is clear and simple. It also crystallizes the domineering nature of a traditional definition of power. We got a much broader take on power from professors Laura Cray and Deborah Grunfeld at Berkeley and Stanford, respectively. Cray, who has spent decades examining power and women's relationship to it, describes power as the ability to affect change. She says women tend to focus on the end result of what they can do with power, whereas men tend to be more hierarchical and higher in social dominance than women, and see power as inferring control over people or resources. It's the difference between power over and power to. Deborah Grunfeld concurs with that more communal view of power, and she adds that what's happening in the study of power today is profound. Now that more women are studying the field, the notion of what power is, what the definition is naturally broadening. A diversity of viewpoints is diversifying power in academia, laying bare an essential truth. The study of power itself, of social sciences, has been biased toward more male definitions, a reflection, of course, of the organization of society. Women don't see power as a zero-sum proposition. They don't see it, in other words, as more power for me means less for you, and vice versa. Women see power to, not power over. And these differences, and now today the increasing reluctance of women to mold themselves to the male version, are resulting in a stalled rise to the top, but also in enormous workplace friction. It's as though we're tuned into different frequencies. Insight number three, power does stuff to our brains, but not always in the ways we think. In 1887, Lord John Acton, the English politician and writer, came up with the immortal phrase, "Power tends to corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely." A century and a half later, Acton's premise still intrigues neuroscientists. The study of how power affects our brains is in its infancy, but it's already thrown up some provocative new ideas, ideas which both reinforce and contradict his theory. We took a deep look at all of the cutting-edge brain science. Much of it did reinforce the bad stuff. Power does tend to encourage less empathy. It forces people into kind of a remove, as if they're observing things from a distance. It also gives people an inflated sense of what they can ask for and get away with. As power outsiders, based on our gender at least, we were prepared to buy into a power is corrupting argument. But again, power had surprises for us. Some of the most recent neuroscience suggests that power can be quite neutral, even positive. At a very basic level, it seems to activate us. People who have power or who are primed to have power in experiments are more inclined to do things, to take action. And that can be a big positive in life. Very often, the more we're willing to do, the more opportunities accrue. Conversely, people in low power positions are often less willing to take action, and that cycle can reinforce itself with dire consequences. Two other points critical for women. One researcher told us power in many ways can liberate its possessors and create an ability to act more authentically. That is valuable for women and should be a power selling point. Power should be thought of as a tool. Often neutral, but quite useful for women in that it might allow us to be more authentically ourselves. We also uncovered research that suggests that so far, women who do rise to the top are less likely to be corrupted by power, to experience that loss of empathy and connection to the lower ranks. You can try to prime yourself for power right now. Before a big job interview or any other important event, set aside 15 minutes to remember a time in your life when you felt powerful. Think of a time when you were influencing others to make a change, for example. Spend at least 5 minutes writing about it on paper to help retrieve the memory. Note how you feel as you go about your challenge. It's not a long-term fix, but studies show the effort can last for at least a day, and over time, it can be habit-forming. Studies have shown in real interviews that those who primed for power had better outcomes. Insight number four, power still involves pots and pans. We don't usually write about marriages. Confidence, science, diversity, economic policy, we've tackled all that. But as we researched power, we realized we couldn't ignore what happens at home. If you remember one thing about this insight, let it be this. Often the biggest barrier to women getting power isn't, in fact, our bosses, it's husbands. And we say husbands rather than partners because the research shows, for the most part, it's in marriages between a man and a woman that these barriers continue to be the most immutable. A few astounding, but perhaps not surprising examples. A woman with a job does more housework than a man who doesn't work. Do we need to repeat this? Men who don't have jobs do less housework than their wives struggling to do both. Married men have more than 3 hours of leisure time than their wives. Young men aren't any better at sharing housekeeping duties. Men 18 to 34, while progressive often on same-sex marriage, politics, other social issues, still have an old-fashioned view of who should do the housework. What is changing is the term for it. More experts are calling it what it is, an unpaid contribution to the economy. And it's not doing the pots and pans, actually, that takes so much time. It's the planning, now known as cognitive labor. At work, this is a highly paid skill. Anticipating an issue, identifying it, deciding what to do, monitoring the outcome. Same skill set, whether about a kid's soccer camp or setting up a conference. Economists find that women handle the bulk of the cognitive labor at home. Ugh, right? Here's a bigger ugh. It's hard for women as well to step outside of gender norms. We may think we want help. We may fantasize about a husband who does more of the housework, but this next bit of data shocked us. 1/3 of American women now earn more than their husbands, and that number grows every year. That's not necessarily a surprise. But Misty Hegenis, an economist with the U.S. Census Bureau, found something really strange recently. In couples where the woman earns more than the man, the couples lie about it on the U.S. Census form. And men and women tilt the surveys in the same way. It's not just the man lying on the form, the women do it too. It's almost instinctive, this need to protect the status quo, at least on the surface and for the public. Here's the bottom line in terms of what's happening at home. We can't do it all. Or rather, we can and we do, but it's hugely stressful, unsustainable, and simply unfair. It shortchanges women's career potential, and it also shortchanges our partners, and perhaps even our children, who end up perpetuating worn-out stereotypes in their own adult relationships as well. Insight number five. Men may seem to be clinging to power unfairly, but it's important that we use a different lens. Humans hate loss. It's known as loss aversion theory. Whether it's something as small as a sweater or as big as power, we fight hard to keep what we have. It's critical to see this perspective, to view the reaction men may be having to their loss of power in scientific terms, in human terms. It helps us empathize with their position, and that might ease the power transition. It's not always an egotistic, willful attempt to derail women's attempts at getting power. It is a natural reaction to try to keep what they have. And actually, what men have, as ardently as they may try to keep it, isn't that great. The other part of this insight is that men are stuck in a narrow box they don't really want to be in. Their worth is largely defined by success at work, which is limiting, to say the least. They're pushed by society, by spouses, to keep playing the outdated role of primary breadwinner, which is why the number of stay-at-home dads has barely grown in a quarter of a century. Some men realize the zero-sum power formula isn't working for them either. One law partner laid out an existence many men repeated. Men get sucked into our careers and the demands, he said. We find it hard to say no or to say we've had enough. We don't love it, but we don't have a different roadmap. Men who spoke on the record and off were candid about the social costs of taking a different path. One man who did quit his job told us he had a voice in his head that reprimanded him for failing at the one thing he was supposed to do in life, earn an income. The one thing he was supposed to do in life. How sad is that? Men are missing out on a whole range of life's richer pleasures, the satisfaction of caregiving, for example, because they still feel they have to be a, quote, real man. Belgian sociologist Isabel Roskam has found that in general, women are more prepared to cope with the stress and exhaustion of balancing domestic and work duties, but she contends that's not naturally so. From a young age, girls are imitating women and boys are imitating men. Boys are particularly resistant to imitating behavior not typical to their gender. She says it's urgent that boys are given more chances to see themselves as fully engaged dads, as emotional beings. A more collaborative, more humane approach to power that would take into account values beyond the workplace would benefit everyone.
Thank you, Claire. That was 5 big ideas from The Power Code: More Joy, Less Ego, Maximum Impact for Women and Everyone by Katty Kay and Claire Shipman. You might also like our book bite for One Bold Move a Day: Meaningful Actions Women Can Take to Fulfill Their Leadership and Career Potential by Shauna Hocking. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.